The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome musical guest, the fabulous Miss Wendy. Also cover the top movies at the box office, Mom of the Year, music news, funny stories, dumb crimes, and sports headlines. All this and more on Revelator. Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. And we've got a really fun show for you. We really do. The fabulous Miss Wendy will be stopping by. Really cool artist from the California area. She's been opening up for a lot of cool acts, including Slash from formerly of Guns N' Roses. So definitely stick around for that. Really cool young lady and some pretty cool tunes as well. So definitely stick around for that. But I want to start off with this. We haven't done a story time with Ryan in a little while. And this particular story I ran into kind of sparked some feelings in me, and Mike knows what I'm talking about, and he's laughing right now as I get ready to tell the story. But let me give you a background. So apparently there's a shortage on clowns. This is a story about a week or so ago, and I'm kind of sitting on the story a little bit. I wasn't sure if I wanted to talk about it or not, you know, and so I'm like, what the hell, last minute, you know, I'll talk about it tonight with you. So there's a shortage of clowns, and there's this association of the International American International Clown Organization, and apparently the organization since 2006 has seen a drop of members, over 1,000 actually in that time. Obviously, there's, you know, they didn't want to share specific numbers for a lot of reasons, but one of the presidents of the organization, Glenn Kohlberger, I wonder what his clown name is, by the way, but the Kohlberger clown, he says a lot of old clowns are just dying, and a lot of the younger generation's just not into clowning. They're different clowns, I guess. You know, he kind of hinted that in the article that they're different clowns. They're not clowns, you know. But this brought up a I don't even know how to say it. Okay, all right, let me just say it. Okay, so in my teenage years, right, my mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry that I'm telling this story. And a lot of you will probably wonder, this probably will shed a lot of light on the reason I am the way I am, maybe. But my mom actually trained to be a clown in my teenage years, from the age of like 15 to 17, 18 years old. And this is my dad was still around at the time, and my dad was kind of a quiet guy, and he just kind of was like, that's what you want to do, you know? You know? And, my mom did this, she took it serious. She did the classes and had like the outfit and the makeup and the squeaky nose and the whole deal, you know? And, there's this really weird period where, you know, once you get your clowning certificate or what have you, that you have to start practicing balloon animals, right? So, my mom is, you know, sitting around the house with this pump and the pump they use to blow up the balloons and stuff, and she's making these balloon animals all over the place. They're everywhere. There's just balloon animals everywhere, you know? And giraffes and hats and dogs and all those cool little things. You know, and like, I guess if I were like 10, it'd probably be pretty cool. Like, my mom's a clown. My mom's clown name, if you're curious, by the way, is actually Sadie. Sadie the clown. And for those of you who know my mom, it's creepy, right? Mike, you can attest this. I think you had forgot about it until I mentioned it. Also, you had apparently had blocked it out as well as I had.
Yeah, it was a traumatic experience, and I had to dig deep to find. I forgot the name Sadie. I thought it was Pennywise.
Right. So I remember one night, and I wasn't the perfect teenager by any means. I had, I went out and, partaked in some drugs and some marijuana, and there during those days, way more than I do now, that's for sure. I remember, sneaking in at curfew time, way after curfew, and sneaking in, I'm like, man, I'm just gonna crash in on the couch, I'm just gonna slide it in, not gonna worry about working, getting down the hallway and all that stuff. I'm just gonna get onto the couch, pass out, and I'm good, right? I don't turn any lights on or anything. I just slip the shoes off, sneak a little water out of the, you know, out of the fridge, you know. And so I'm creeping, You know, I get to the couch. I'm like, yeah, I made it. I'm golden, you know. I'm going to make it. And little do I know that my mom had been up that night practicing balloon animal making. So she had to do something with the balloon animals, and she had put them on the couch. So mind you, I'm inebriated. I'm stoned. I'm drunk. And I'm trying to be as quiet as possible because I'm way past curfew. And so I, you know, I hit the couch, and it's just, you know that noise, the squeaky noise, you know, like the balloons, you know, and it's just, there's a bunch of them. There's tons of them. So I'm swimming in a couch full of squeaky balloons, right? And I'm like, what the hell, you know? So I finally, you know, I finally get them all off, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so busted. And I end up getting busted. My mom ends up waking up, you know, and like, are you just getting home? I'm like, what is with the balloon animals? And it was just like this big talk about her, you know, being a clown and stuff. And it was really, really awkward. And a lot of it I've blocked out, so I can't really share specifics with you, but, there you go. So that's why there's a shortage of clowns, I think, is because, it's just traumatizing to your children, you know, I think is what the moral of the story is. So we'll move on tonight. I'm glad that everybody's going to let me do therapy. That's great. Moving on. This takes place at a bank in China. A guy tries to rob a bank with a meat cleaver. Now, here's the thing. The banks, pretty much almost any banks, I guess, anymore, have the, you know, the tempered glass, the bulletproof glass in front. So this guy's standing. There's a video of it online. This guy is standing in front of the teller with a meat cleaver up to the window. You know, basically like, I want to rob you with this meat cleaver. And the lady at the bank teller is just laughing. She's just dying laughing. She's just hysterical. She hits the little buzzer under the counter, and this, security officer comes over and grips the guy to the ground, and obviously he gets arrested. I don't know what happens to him in China. I guess they take the cleaver and cut his arm off. I don't know. So there's that. But let's move on to another story, and this has to do about Girl Scouts. Now, for those of you listening to the show, take a deep breath. It's not that type of story, okay? Calm down. Zoe and Gracie of California are selling Girl Scout cookies, and they're doing this on a Saturday, like most Girl Scouts do, trying to earn their badges, raise money for the Operation Thin Mint, which goes to U.S. Troops deployed in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Africa. Good cause. And some asshole comes out of the store, you know, and they're usually, you know, kind of out in the front or in the little lobby area where you get your carts and stuff, you know. Man described between the age of 19 and 22 years old runs out of the store and grabs their jar of cash and keeps going. He doesn't come back. I said he was laughing the whole time while he's doing it. And the girls, being traumatized, thought that he was, you know, because he was laughing, thought maybe he was just going to turn around and bring it back. Turns out he doesn't. The guy runs to his car, jumps in his car, which had 300 individuals in it, and takes off. Someone who actually saw it tried to stop the guy and ended up backing out, leaving the parking lot. And they give the license plate number, which is 6KBC407. They really want to catch this guy. It's just really, really dreadful, you know, to do something like that. these young girls are, you know, trying to learn and, you know, do the right thing. And, you know, their parents are, you know, there, and, you know, they're putting in work. They're learning good work ethics at a young age, you know, and that's a lot of what this is about. And, you know, fundraising, it's for a good cause too, for the U.S. troops, you know, deployed overseas, you know, the Operation Thin Mint, which is awesome. And, you know, granted, it's only $45, but it's just a principle at all that somebody would do that. And the fact that he was laughing about it, I think maybe if he would have done this.
The time has come for this cookie.
I mean, I guess anytime you can work the cookie monster in, you can. But I mean, maybe if he just steals a box of cookies, it's not that big a deal, but actually steal the money that they are asking people. You know, it's pretty low, man. That's low. That's really low. Maybe a meth head. I don't know. Gosh, I mean, you're that hard up for cash, you know, you steal from Girl Scouts, for Christ's sakes, man. But the cool thing is that a bunch of people, heard about what happened to the girls at the store that afternoon and ended up raising over $300. They did a donation. So kudos to the people in that area kind of coming together. The girls were a little reluctant to stay there and continue selling cookies. Gee, I wonder why. But they did stick it out. Kudos to those two. And they did raise a bunch of money. Over $300 were donated. And I'm sure they sold a lot of cookies as well. So kudos to them. And hopefully they catch that guy. What a jerk, man. That's pretty low, man, to steal from the Girl Scouts. You gotta be a real low class dude to do that. Speaking of low class, this goes mom of the year, an Arizona woman. I'm using the term mom loosely here, by the way, who left her 5 week old. I'm going to repeat that again. Left her 5 week old baby in a car seat on the roof of the car and drove off. Now, she did plead guilty to child abuse and a misdemeanor DUI. Now, I guess the silver lining here is this. She's scheduled to appear in court in March. But here's the thing. The infant was found unharmed, strapped safely in the middle of an intersection. So the baby's fine. Traumatizing, I'm sure. 5 weeks old. Unbelievable. Driving under the influence. Ugh, just, you know, it's amazing you could take a handbook to drive a vehicle and do all kinds of other things. You need licenses to do this, that, and the other, but anybody can have a kid. Unbelievable. Moving on tonight, something a little bit more lighthearted. You know, I think everybody's had that point in your life. You have an ex that you just want to do something to get back at them in some way, you know, just you've had someone just do you wrong and you just want to, at least in this case, paint dicks all over their property. Well, that's what somebody did. This gentleman, Sean Ludwig, the Black House Development, played a trick on his girlfriend, Tribeca, in her apartment. Now, here's the thing. She's a Manhattan real estate developer. So an argument, I guess, escalated. So he ends up breaking into one of these properties and draws dicks all over the wall and the artwork and everything, and then leaves her a message via text says, "Sorry about the paint. I was a little drunk this weekend." Now, he was charged with trespassing, harassment, criminal mischief, stalking, and impersonation, and also emailing the woman's boss, calling her a harlot and a whore. Woo! Now here's the trigger. This is the kicker to me right here. The guy's lawyer is also obviously taking this very serious. He says, "I find it hard to believe that he was arrested for a felony based on these limp allegations." Ba-dum, ba-dum.
Kapuya, kapuya.
Yeah, that's right. That's a kapuya right there. Hey, I drew some limp dicks on the wall. That can't be. You can't be mad about that. Defacing property with cocks. What is this guy like? I mean, you couldn't come up with anything else. You know, I mean, obviously the guy's pretty torn up about it. You know, he's like emailing her boss, calling her a whore and stuff. And his boss is like, "Yeah, probably. Yeah, she probably is. I've been banging her." Uh-huh. No, it doesn't specify that. So I don't want to, you know, suggest that. But you know, just, you know, if we're speculating, the guy's drawing dicks on the wall. I can speculate if I want to. This guy's drawing dicks on the wall. Okay. Let's head on over to music news. And the fabulous Miss Wendy will be joining us here in just a moment. So definitely stick around for that. But music news, ex Megadeth guitarist, Marty Friedman to unleash a new album Inferno coming out this May. So look forward to that. Now, if this doesn't make you feel old, I don't know what will. Soundgarden, Super Unknown, probably one of a lot of people think it's one of the best albums of the 90s. It's definitely up there. It's going to be turned 20 years old this year. Think about that for a second. Soundgarden, Super Unknown turns 20 years old. Now, on the anniversary, they're going to do a massive re-release on June 3rd through A&M Records. The disc, which will include a bunch of original tracks, obviously the original album, remastered album, but also will include demo versions of Black Hole Sun, Fell on Black Days, The Day I Tried to Live, My Way of Spoon Man, also acoustic versions as well. There's the deluxe two-disc edition as well, and there also will be a limited edition on vinyl. So the Super Deluxe is going to feature all kinds of B-sides, demos, and all kinds of different things, rehearsals, you know, the whole deal, and all kinds of remixes as well. So it looks like it's going to be, you know, it's not your standard, here's an album, we just, you know, we re-released it and we're calling it a reissue. It looks like there's going to be a lot of stuff that's been unreleased and unheard on this as well, which is really cool. And so if you're a big Soundgarden fan, it's definitely right up your alley. Again, that looks like that's going to come out sometime in June. Black Label Society is also set to release a new LP April 8th. The brand new single, My Dying Time, is also available for purchase right now on iTunes if you're interested. And we've been following this story, gosh, for about a year or so now, a little over a year. And that is the lead singer, Tim Lambus. Whatever, the guy tried to hire, basically the more the story is, however you want to say his name, the guy tried to hire somebody to kill his wife, okay? And he pled guilty today in a California court. Now, if you're not familiar with the story, I'll give you a little background here. Now, Tim, for the band As I Lay Dying, which obviously is dead, Now, obviously, you know, this guy had an issue with his ex-wife and wanted to do away with her. And the reason this trial took so long, they had rescheduled a bunch of things new. And the reason he came back, he originally was pleading, you know, not guilty. And his plea changed today because the reason they kept changing the court date is because new evidence came out. And the new evidence was this, is that one of his workout buddies at this gym he was working at in California, was also apparently a, supposedly a known steroid, distributor, but also was also a friend of Tim's. And, this guy came forward and testified against him, saying that he originally came to him about hiring him, his services, to kill his estranged wife. Now, obviously, this particular gentleman, he was like, he's like, that's not what I do, man. He's like, I'm a bodyguard. I don't kill people for money, you know? So the guy goes to his attorney, and the guy's like, man, good thing you came to me, because if he does go through with it, you become an accessory to murder. So he ends up calling the police department and telling them about it. Then they set up an undercover sting where he's caught on video with the envelope and the passcodes to their security gated community, security codes to their community to have his wife killed for an undisclosed amount of money. Obviously, all this stuff coming out, they're originally scheduled for court on the 19th, and then it came out today that he is going to plead guilty and he only faces up to 9 years in prison. Now, he's been under house arrest for a year and a half. Now, my understanding of the court system, I imagine that will probably work in his favor, considering he's probably working a plea deal at this point and pleading guilty. So he'll plead guilty and do a plea deal, and I'm sure that his year and change of house arrest will come off that 9 years. I have no doubt in my mind that will happen. But only getting 9 years for conspiracy to commit murder. I guess the moral of the story is, if you want to kill your wife, okay, do it yourself. I mean, camping trips are always a good way to go, I guess. You know, electrical work at the house. You know, hey, she's always telling me to fix that weird light switch in the bathroom. You know, I mean, that's probably the direction you want to go with it. You know, you don't want to go hire somebody. Jeez, Tim, come on. As I lay dying, do your own work, man. You know, anybody teach anything? Come on now. Let's take a look at former guest updates. I'm really excited about a lot of these. One is the band Throw the Fight from Minneapolis, Minnesota, we had on a while back. Kudos to those guys. They just released a brand new video for their single, When the World Stops Spinning. Very cool video. Really cool dudes as well. Go ahead and check out Throw the Fight. Also, Pop Evil wrapping up their highly successful run with Stone Sour this weekend. And they're heading over to Europe in support for Five Finger Death Punch as well. The band currently has two number one hits on the top 10 active rock singles right now, so kudos to those guys. And Matt from Pop Evil, couldn't be any cooler, man. Really cool dude. And congratulations on his sobriety, over 3 months now. Good job, brother. And Nonpoint are returning to the studios to record another album. They will be doing so in Chicago very shortly. So looks like new Nonpoint music maybe by the end of the year, early 2015. Maybe we should get those guys back on, and when they get a new album, that'd be great to have Elias and those guys back on the show. Also, a friend of mine and former guest, Alex Ryder, also the very first guest of Revelator, our 50th Revelator show will be coming up here in a couple weeks, which will feature Mike DeWolf from Taproot and Rob from Mindset Evolution. I believe Alex will be joining us as well, and a few other past guests as well for our 50th show. She's currently in the studio working on a new single and also working on new material as well. And kudos to Clutch for releasing another album from a different band under their label. And this is the band Lion Eyes, who we're trying to get on the show. Really, really cool dudes. And you know, their new album, Jetpack Soundtrack, man, great, great CD. Rock, blues, three-piece band. Their album is officially released today. I encourage everyone to go check that out. Lion Eyes, Lionize. Really, really cool band, released under Clutch's label. And really sad news. We finish up the music section. We head on over to the movie section. Before we do the top 10 movies, really sad news. Harold Ramis passing away. Obviously, an autoimmune disease I've been battling for quite some time. But I think for maybe the younger generation might not be as familiar with some of the films. But man, this guy was responsible for so many. Animal House, Ghostbusters, Stripes, Groundhog Day. I mean, working with likes of Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, John Candy, John Belushi, Bill Murray, Billy Crystal. We did analyze that with Billy Crystal and De Niro. He was in Knocked Up as well. I don't know what any more I can really add there. I mean, the body of work speaks for itself. Writer, director, you know, comedian, you know, the list goes on there. We've got a couple clips that we found pretty hilarious from films that he had done. So let's check those out.
Okay, that's really very good. I'd like to try it just one more time, and then we'll call it a day. I met her on a Monday, and my heart stood still. Somebody told me that her name was Jill. Okay, great, great. All right, I'll see you next week, boys.
Harold Ramis in Stripes there, 1981 classic. And this one from Ghostbusters, 1984 Ghostbusters. Unbelievable. Check this out.
These men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick. Bill Murray, if you follow Bill Murray on Twitter, I'm sure you can just Google, you know, Bill Murray, and he came out with a statement as well. Obviously, those guys are very, very close and worked together for a number of years on Ghostbusters and a lot of other films as well. So Harold Ramis, gone at the age of 69. And this is a short clip of him in the movie Knocked Up from, I believe, 2007.
You roll with it. That's the beauty of it all.
You roll with it. That's the beauty of it all. And I can't say any better than that. Let's take a look at the movies. Top 10 at the box office this past weekend. Winter Tale, 2.1 million. Endless Love at 3.9. The movie Frozen, still in the top 10, obviously dropped quite a bit because a lot of other new movies coming out. But 14 weeks at the box office, $384 million. The movie Ride Along at 4.6 million. About Last Night at 7.5 million. The Monuments Men, 7.9 million. RoboCop, 9.8 million. Pompeii at 10.3 million, 3 Days to Kill 12.2 million, and the Lego Movie a little over $31 million in 3 weeks at the box office has made $183 million. Nothing but stellar reviews for that. And I think I'm going to take my son Griffin to see that probably Friday afternoon. So I'll hopefully get a review next week on the show for you. But the fabulous Miss Wendy will be joining us in just a moment. Until then, this is one of the tracks we'll be listening to tonight off her album. This song is called Silicon Assassin here on Revelator. That is Silicone Assassin here on Revelator, and I'm joined now by the fabulous Miss Wendy, and I'm very excited to have you on the show. Now, first off, I guess thank you for taking the time, and we appreciate anyone who donates their time to the show, so thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
It's definitely a pleasure. Now, I have to ask, the name, the fabulous Miss Wendy, what do people typically call you when you're out on tour or your friends? Would they just call you Wendy, or, you know, do people kind of mess with you or at all with the name or anything, or?
I'll pretty much answer to anything, really.
Now, I have to ask, is this something that someone nicknamed you this, or is this something you kind of came up with, or?
I'm so glad you asked. I went to school at the Musicians Institute, and I was getting up to sing in one of their live performance classes, and the teacher, whom I love, Brian Hacksaw Williams, was like, "The fabulous Miss Wendy, ladies and gentlemen." And I was like, "Oh, that's so cool. I'm going to call myself that." And he was like, "Right on. Okay." And then he called up the next person, like, was like, "The fabulous Miss Veronica." So he just kind of said that for everyone, but I just thought it just kind of, like, I thought it was cool, so it just kind of stuck.
Awesome. Very cool. Now, I'm glad. I was always curious about how, like, people get their names and stuff. So typically, like, when we have bands on, I'll ask them, like, what, instead of asking them why they came up with the name, what bands they didn't pick, you know, or what names they didn't select. And they're usually pretty hysterical. They're like, "Oh, we're going to call ourselves, you know, Stonewashed Marlboro Reds or something." You know what I mean? Like some kind of crazy wacky name or something, you know?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I'm glad you picked the other one, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because, you know, another reason why I picked that name is because I think that a lot of people have very, like, you know, negative or kind of self-deprecating band names, and it's, or like they're kind of trying to, like, out hardcore each other. So I kind of, like, I wanted to be like the anti, like, you know, like, right, hardcore, even though, like, you know, it's like a pretty hard rock show or like bringing it, especially with the guitar. But like you almost don't know it just looking at the name.
Well, just from my small interaction with you, you're definitely a fabulous young lady. I've enjoyed our interactions.
Thank
really, really
you.
Cool.
And, cool.
You know, I really like your take on, like, some of the bands. And I like, we've had a lot of the heavier bands on, too, and I really dig those guys and what they do. And, you know, just the amount of effort it takes to play a live show at that pace with those guys, you know. And some of the band names, even like the one word bands. I used to have this old radio program director. He'd be like, "All these one word bands like Korn and Tool," and you know, like, he's like, they're mighty, they're powerful, they're Tool, you know, like, you know, like the one, you know, like the one word names, or, you know, they have like this real long, like, drawn out name, and you're like, damn, that's some evil, they took some time to come up with some evil words to put together, you know.
I mean, I love it for what it is, but it's just not me, you know. I couldn't see myself being pushed in that direction. But I do. I mean, I love other people's band names that are heavy and dark.
Right. Yeah, I totally did that. We actually had a band on one time called The Paramedic, and I was like, that is like that like, and they were like just straight up just hardcore, just about as heavy as anything you ever hear. And I'm like, The Paramedic fits very well because, like, you feel like, you know, after listening to that for like 45 minutes to an hour, you probably are going to need a ride by one, you know?
Nice.
But I want to get back more to you now. I mean, you know, obviously being a guitar player, you know, singer, songwriter, when did you first start playing, and when did you realize this is something that I want to do with my life?
Well, I first started, like, doing music, like, I mean, as young as I can remember, I was doing, like, choir and choruses and, you know, taking music lessons. And then I started playing guitar when I was about 10. And then, you know, I would play, like, every day. I would wake up at, like, you know, 6 a.m. and play guitar for, like, an hour before I went to school. Then I'd take the guitar to school, and I'd play, like, at lunch, and then I'd go home, and I'd play for hours once I got home. And if you asked me what I was going to be when I was in high school, I thought I was going to be a veterinarian. And I got good grades in math and science, and I got accepted into the best veterinary school in the country. And then some people were like, "You know, Wendy, you're going to have to, like, dissect animals, and you're going to have to put animals to sleep." I was like, "Oh God, I don't think I can handle that." So I was like, "Shoot, what am I going to do?" And I thought, well, you know, I wake up and play guitar, write songs, like, every day, all day long. So I guess I'm going to do music. That's how it ended up happening.
Very cool. Now, So did you ever get it? Did you ever do the veterinary thing? Did you actually, you know, do like an apprenticeship and kind of go through the process and then realize, gosh, this is not for me?
Oh, no. I mean, I finished high school. Like I finished high school early and I just went to the Musicians Institute.
Awesome. Now, do you remember your first guitar?
Well, my first guitar was 100% Rosewood Aria acoustic that my dad had bought for my mom, like back when they were dating. And like she didn't really play it that much. It was kind of like in the closet and it was all scratched up. And I wanted to play the drums and my parents said, drums are too loud, but here's this guitar. If you want to play something, right, play this. And my brother, Brian, came over and looked at that guitar and said, this is actually a really nice guitar. It's, you know, it's too nice for a beginner. So he was like, you know, I'll trade you an electric and an acoustic for that guitar. And so I got my first electric guitar and that was a Strat and it had a Floyd Rose and I played it so much that, it doesn't even work anymore.
Awesome. You still have it though?
I do, but it's weird. It's like, you know, no matter like how much like I adjust it now, it's like it feels like there's like pieces of it like missing that are just never going to come back because I played that guitar too much. Like I think it is possible to play a guitar so much that you just kill it. Also, you know, keep in mind my brother played it before he gave it to me. So
now does your brother still have that acoustic guitar that your mom used to have?
I think I actually took it back because I saw he never played it. So I was like, I'm going to borrow it.
I'm keeping this. Yeah. Awesome. What's the, do you remember the first time you ever smashed a guitar? Have you ever had that, option of smashing one on stage or anything? Do you remember the first time you got to do that?
I do. I went to a guitar center and I bought like a Epiphone beginner, like $89 guitar. And I was playing this like festival for the LA Gem, the Journal for Education of Medical Marijuana. And during the last song, I held it over my head and I smashed it on the concrete once and it just bounced. Then I smashed it again and it just bounced again. And I just hit it a couple more times as hard as I could. And I couldn't break it, but I did get it to stop playing. And then somebody hit me to the trick that you're supposed to like loosen up the neck before you do that so it'll break. But I didn't do that, so I just I like, tried.
Why won't this guitar break? That's awesome. Very cool stuff. Now getting back more to the music side of things, now obviously you got your first guitar, you know, kind of from your parents a little bit and also your brother. So is there certain music groups or influences from that time that kind of spoke to you? And also, is there any bands or people now that kind of that you still use as influences?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like, you know, having like older brothers and sisters, they kind of like introduced me to some of the music that they liked, like, you know, like grunge, like Nirvana and like Pixies. Like the Misfits and the Ramones, and I thought those are all great. And I love Madonna, I love Lady Gaga, I love the Beatles, I love Pink, she's awesome. Gosh, I feel like I'm missing somebody. Madonna, Lady Gaga, Pink. It's gonna come to me sometime in the interview. I'm gonna like shout out another name, I swear.
Now we've had other female vocalists on, and I've actually been surprised to hear this, but a lot of female vocalists have mentioned Mariah Carey. I don't know if that's the name you're looking for, but we've had a lot of female vocalists that obviously don't have that type of range, and there's not many people that do obviously, either. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's many people on the planet that do, but you know, is there a certain, you know, you mentioned a couple of female vocalists there. Is there anyone that you know that kind of you pattern yourself after at all, or look
no,
up to?
No, actually, no, very much not. You know, when I was when I was taking guitar lessons, I would say to my guitar teacher, you know, I want to be like so and so or so and so, and he was just like, nope, you want to be like Wendy, and he just kind of nipped it in the bud right away. And I'm really glad because I think, like, you know, sometimes I like turn on a band and it'll sound like, you know, contrived, like it could be another band that's already in existence that you already heard of. And I feel like the fact that he kind of just like bitch smacked that right out of my hands immediately, like, helped me grow into more of an original artist.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good way to go. And, you know, sometimes when, you know, if I talk to people, you know, they're like, oh, you have a so-and-so band. Who do they sound like? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't like listen to other like musicians to think about who they're going to sound like, you know, right. You know, but it's hard to describe that. I that's like the worst question. And I imagine it, as a musician, it's probably pretty tough that answering that too. But anyway, obviously you've been touring, you've been playing a lot of really cool shows. You just recently got done playing some shows with UPO. Okay. You've also played some shows with Slash as well. Yes. What is your, I guess your most favorite and least favorite thing about touring?
My most favorite thing about touring is, just, you know, getting to just rock and make people happy. It's really the biggest, most important and fun thing. And, what's my least favorite thing about touring? That's a tough one because I really love it. I mean, I feel just as comfortable on the road as I do at home, except I, you know, it is nice to be, you know, at home during the winter.
Right. Now, you know, being on tour, you know, as a female, what are, is there any awkward moments, or, you know, everyone kind of pretty respectful for the most part, I imagine. I mean, you're touring with, you know, obviously guys who have been in the industry for quite some time with, you know, Slash and UPO, so I imagine there's not any, like, awkward or uncomfortable moments, I wouldn't think.
Awesome. Oh, it's a UFO.
UFO, gosh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No worries. But, you know, I think when you're dealing with people with alcohol, there's always going to be, like, some kind of awkward moment. And when you put people together, there's going to be awkward moments no matter what. But I do notice that, you know, a lot of nights when I'm on the road, I'm, you know, often the only female on stage the entire night, or, you know, one of just a couple, and, you know, generally the only one playing guitar.
Now, as the only female on the road, obviously, you know, I don't know if you had a chance to hang out at the merch table afterwards and kind of do a meet and greet kind of thing. What's the, what is the best, maybe worst pickup line you've heard from a fan?
The worst? Oh God. Yeah. I don't even know. So many. I think one that sticks out was, this one guy who was just so drunk, and he was like, I've heard your lyrics. You know, let's go have sex right now. And I was just like, what? He's like, you know, I know how you are. And I'm like, whoa, dude, you know, those are songs, you know, and there's different songs for different moods and different situations. And he's all like, so what you're telling me is you're a big faker, huh? And I was just like, what? I think that might have been the worst pickup line I've ever heard in my life.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty bad. Any clever ones that come to mind where you're like, that's actually not too bad?
No, but you know, I've been like gifted with like a, you know, a lot of backside, and it's kind of started when I was like, you know, maybe like, 12 or 14 or 16. And so I figured out what back that thing up was pretty quick.
Right. Right. Well said. Well, I'll tell you what, Wendy, let's take a small break here. We've got another track that we're going to play from you. This one's actually titled Violence. What do we need to know about this track before we get it on tonight?
This was a song written by Kim Fowley. In about 1 minute, he just spilled out these words, and I wrote them down and took them home and put music to it.
Awesome. Well, this is the fabulous Miss Wendy here on Revelator. It is Violence.
Got the silence.
That is Violence here on Revelator. I'm joined now by the fabulous Miss Wendy, and she definitely is fabulous. And again, I appreciate you taking the time. Now,
we talked about touring.
Not a problem at all. Now, we talked about touring, you know, playing and, you know, kind of, you know, your background history and those type of things. But you also have a brand new album that will be in stores April 29th. Talk to me about this album, the writing process for you, and how excited you are to have this come out in spring.
Oh, thank you. Well, this album was produced by Kim Fowley, who put together The Runaways. It's called No One Can Stop Me, and it's about empowerment, especially female empowerment. And the way I wrote these songs was I basically laid in bed for hours and sat in a chair for hours and just stared at the wall and just wrote them in my head till they sounded right. And just kind of kept running it over and over and over again until I was happy. And then I put it on a 4-track and took it to the studio. Three of the songs were co-written by Kim Fowley as well. He gave me lyrics and I put music to them.
Now, when that happens, you know, they're like, hey, here's the lyrics that, you know, and you put music to it. Is that harder for you, songwriting wise, to fit music to lyrics, or is it better for you to have the music and then fit words to it? Does that make sense at all?
I mean, it all works. I try to make the song what it's supposed to be. You know, I believe that you just try to the song kind of already exists, and it's just like, as the creator of the song, you're more of like a conduit to the song. Like, the song already exists in some kind of a quantum universe, and you're just kind of like grabbing it and bringing it over here. Almost, it's like more of being like a median or a channeler. It's really weird, but I believe that like the song's kind of, it's already written, and you're just grabbing it out of midair.
We seem like you kind of have, I hate to use the word organic, I guess, lack of a better word, they're just kind of a natural kind of flow as the recording process. When you have, you know, you have material, you go to the studio, the producers kind of give you advice or tweaking, like, hey, maybe we should, you know, put this guitar part here, arrangements. And that, is that where most of the, kind of tweaking, I guess, comes in, is more studio time? Or do you pretty much have everything laid out? Like, this is the song, this is how I want it to sound. You get in, just kind of lay it down? Or?
Well, I mean, the first thing I did was bring a bunch of songs to Kim Fowley, and he, you know, picked the songs on the record and the order of the songs. And then we went in the studio, we recorded them, you know, like during the process, you know, they'll have some ideas like, hey, maybe try this like lick or whatever. And, but for the most part, I pretty much know what I want to do before I go in there, try to get it done as quick as possible, because I want it to be organic. If you keep running over something over and over and over again in the studio, I think after a certain amount of time, you kind of lose some of that pizzazz.
Well, I think, you know, I think that's kind of a good way to put it, because you kind of want it to still have that, you know, want it to be, you know, kind of raw, I guess. You know, you want to kind of have that kind of feel, I think.
Do your homework before you go in the studio. Be ready, you know. It's like, it's not just sitting there in studio, okay, what should we do now, you know? No, be ready. Right,
sometimes I think a lot of the, you know, and I don't want to knock any bands or anything, but like sometimes there's some music, it just sounds so overdone and just compressed. Like when you hear it, you know, especially like, you know, on a device and you're listening to like a decent pair of headphones or something, you can hear how just smashed up, how just compressed everything is, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's indicative of today's music industry or not, but, I guess maybe to a certain extent it is, but,
That's a good point. You know, that's a good point. I totally agree with you. Sometimes they can be like flat, you know, and a lot of records can sound like each other. It's really nice when a record has different sound.
Yeah, I like kind of the old school way of doing things. I think a good example, I'll bring up Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters. The last album they did was just such a raw album, and it was actually literally done on old school tape and in Dave Grohl's garage, you know, and that album is I freaking love that album. It's really good. It just kind of has that natural, like, it just wasn't forced. It just kind of like a bunch of guys got together. Here's our material. Let's lay it down on tape. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, and yeah. You know, boom, and here it is, you know? The White Stripes doing that too. And also, yes. You know, the first time I ever went to Detroit, I got to go to the Motown Museum and I got to, you know, see the chambers where they, you know, they have vocal chambers where it's just like, it's just echo chambers where they recorded the vocals. And then they had like kind of like another echo chamber, but bigger, that the band was in. And the band wasn't in a very big room at all, but they really, you know, they didn't like, it was just start. Everything was just starting. They didn't have that much to work with. So they really had to learn how to just manipulate the sound, you know, organically. Right. And I think that, you know, that's a skill a lot of people are lacking today. They can make anybody in the studio sound great, even if they don't necessarily sound great live.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. Now, the album, I think you said April 29th. Do you have a name? Is this going to be a self-titled, or do you have a name for the album at all? Or are you still
working on that? Oh, yeah, it's called No One Can Stop Me.
Gotcha, okay. Now, No One Can Stop Me, now, is that something, obviously we're going to hear the song No One Can Stop Me closing out tonight in a moment, but what was the kind of the idea behind the name of the album for you?
Well, the name of the album came about, the song came about first. I wrote the song for Lita Ford, hoping that she would sing it, and the original lyrics were, "My name is Lita Ford, like the car, first girl rock star playing lead guitar. I'm undefeated. I've been gone for a while. Now I'm back with my axe and the boys go wild." And Kim listened to it. Kim Fowley, who put together The Runaways and produced the record, and said, "You know, I like the song, but I think that you should just rewrite it and make it about yourself." I said, "Okay," so I wrote, "My name is Wendy. I like guitar, like boys, like to party, and I like to rock hard. I'm proud of it because I got my own style, kicking ass on my axe till the boys go wild." And then I decided to name the whole record after it.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, you're a heck of a guitar player, that's for sure.
Thank you.
I like your... Your personality is awesome, by the way. And I don't know. I've only seen photos of you, but I'm sure that I'm sure the guys, really, really enjoy seeing you on stage. And if I ever get to see you on stage, I will not be the drunk guy going, "Let's go do it in the back."
Thank you. I appreciate that.
"Hey, you girl."
Right.
"You're not from around here, are you?"
Right. Yeah, that would be awesome.
And anyone who listens to the show knows that I live in the South, but I'm originally from the Northeast, and we usually always do like these really funny bits about people from the South. So I always, you know, like, "Well, I'll tell you what, sir." Well, anyway, but
he has like a Southern hospitality.
Oh, I don't think I've run across that here. Is that true? I didn't think that was real. You know, and everyone's like, "Well, maybe you're not far south enough." I'm like, "I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. How much farther south do I have to go to get this?" You know?
I love it.
But anyway.
That would be awesome, Southern
Nashville. Well, Wendy, I'm sure people are going to be interested in what's going on with you. And I know you have a show, I think, in May in Vegas, right? Is that right?
May 24th, opening up for Quiet Riot in Vegas.
Very cool.
I think it's like a 300 person venue, and Quiet Riot I think usually plays to like 2,000 or 3,000 people in Vegas. So I'm not sure what kind of crazy tricks you might have to pull to get in. But I will be announcing more tour dates soon, so check out www.thefabulousmisswendy.com, and also please check out my band on iTunes as well.
Very, very cool. And you're also on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Facebook, The Fabulous Miss Wendy Official. Twitter, The Fab Miss Wendy. The Fabulous Miss Wendy was too long, so I had to shorten it.
Well, Wendy, it's definitely been a pleasure, and we close out tonight with the song we talked about, which is also in the name of the album, which comes out April 29th, No One Can Stop Me. Anything other than what we've already talked about the song that you would like to add?
No, just thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
It's been a pleasure, and definitely keep in touch. And when the new album comes out, I know you're gonna be busy, booking shows and playing and stuff. But I tell this to everybody, and I mean it, that if you're ever in the Nashville area or close, let me know, and I will do my best to make it out and see you play live. And we try to support every artist on the show as best we can here, is for the long haul, and we're not going anywhere. We're here for the duration. So thanks again for your time, and we close out the fabulous Miss Wendy. No one can stop me here on Revelator. Can stop me here on Revelator. That is by the fabulous Miss Wendy, and again thanks to Wendy for stopping by and hanging out. Really, really cool guest. And for more information about this particular episode of Revelator, head on over to omnes.tv. again, that's omnes.tv. click on episode number 48 and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/omnes.tv. again, that's omnes.tv. you can also find me, Ryan, on Twitter, Ryan_unsigned. And we've got a big 50th show coming up, and also a guest we haven't had in a long time coming on next week, and that is David Martinez, a guy who was on the old show twice. Actually, he was on one of our first Christmas shows, and also one of the early shows when we started really doing a lot of music guests. So David Martinez will be stopping by, and then obviously the 50th anniversary. Hard to believe we've been doing the show for just a shade over a year by that time. And again, we have a bunch of cool guests coming, so definitely check that out. It's going to be really cool. As we look here at some of the sports headlines, March Madness right around the corner. College basketball really heating up, again, in the conference tournament play here. That's coming right around the corner. Man, we'll be covering that a little bit. You know, get the brackets out, and we'll figure out how in the heck we're going to do that. A lot of decent teams this year. I think Duke, Kansas, Syracuse, Arizona, Michigan State, Wichita State. I don't care if they play in the Mountain West or not. Those guys are a really good ball club. They haven't even lost yet this season, so kudos to them for winning every game at this point. But a lot of really decent teams out there. Again, some of the ones that you always hear about, you know, Duke, Kansas, you know, Syracuse, Michigan State, a lot of the top teams that are always out there. But, you know, there's always sleepers. Florida, another team that kind of has really crept into the scene. They've won 19 in a row. I believe they're number one in the country right now as well. Now, whether Florida can win it all, I don't know. Once we start analyzing college hoops a little more, we get into March Madness. Like I said, the way I fill my bracket out is this. Who has the most seniors and who has played the most basketball together? You're looking at the mid-majors. That's secondary. The first thing you look at is which team out of the power conferences like Kansas and Duke and all those teams, who has the most NBA caliber talent? And that's typically, you know, where you're going to make your picks when it comes down to it. And then you look at the mid-majors and go, okay, these guys have six seniors, seven seniors that have played that have played 4 years of solid basketball, or at least, you know, started three, you know. And then, you know, at that point, you know, a lot of times those teams can beat some of the teams even if they have some NBA ready talent, just for the simple fact that they have continuity and they get a little chip on their shoulder and they play, you know, they play hard and they don't worry about how they're going to look in the scouts. They just go out there and they hustle their butt off and play. So, and that's why you see those crazy upsets, you know, in the Sweet 16. But, again, we'll cover that a little bit more. But, the NFL Combine, I guess if you like guys running around in their boxer shorts, that's all for you right there. That's what we'll leave it at that. I don't take too much stock in that. And that's more for show, and that's really genius marketing by the NFL that people will totally get into that. But, you know, some guys are fast, some guys are, you know, there was an offensive tackle. I saw an update. The guy was 330 some pounds and ran a 4.540 ran a 40 yard dash under 5 seconds, which is ridiculous for a guy that has to do that. But, also in NBA news, not much has changed in the landscape of the NBA. I saw LeBron James got his nose broken the other night, which as a Cleveland sports fan kind of made me chuckle a little bit. But, how about NBA Jason Collins becoming the very first openly gay pro athlete, to actually play in the game. He played in Los Angeles. He signed with the Brooklyn Nets on a contract. Now, Jason Collins is a 10-year veteran in the NBA. Kudos to him, man. That takes a lot of guts, especially, you know, to come out amongst your peers and say, you know, hey, I'm openly gay. And kudos to the Brooklyn Nets for signing him. What I thought was interesting is that Mikhail Prokhorov, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, is from Russia. And I remember during the Olympics, they had this big thing about how they were anti-gay. I thought that was very interesting for the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, who's from Russia, a country that is very, very anti-gay, to sign and play the very first night he was on the team and the first openly gay male player in the NBA. So kudos to him, and kudos to the organization. And but what I really would like to see is this. How about instead of, oh, this is the first gay basketball player, this is the first baseman who's gay to play in baseball, this is the first lineman who's gay, how about, you know, when do we get past that and say it's just another dude out there on the field, you know, busting his butt to play a sport that he loves, and a lot of hard work has gone into it? Why does his sexual orientation even matter? That's where we need to go. And when we get there, then you know, maybe we're finally starting to make progress as a society. But the Olympics wrapping up, the gold medal count, the medal count, how about Russia with 33 medals, Norway with 26, Canada with 25, the United States with 28, and Netherlands with 24. Total, those are total medals. The gold count is Russia 13, Norway 11, Canada 10, United States 9, and Netherlands 8. That's your Winter Olympic wrap up there. Winter Olympics kind of lost steam there kind of towards the last 4, 5, 6 days of the games there, partially because a lot of the really, really fun events are about over, other than the hockey, of course. But hey, that's about all I have for you. And again, Mike, wonderful job as always. Again, thanks to the fabulous Miss Wendy for coming by. And we got a lot of great guests coming up. Like I said, the 50th show is coming up. Next week, David Martinez will be coming on, great singer-songwriter. A lot of other great guests in the work, so definitely keep it locked right here on Revelator. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was episode 48. Yes, it's true. Da-do-run-run.
For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Rebel Letter, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Rebel Letter. Thanks for listening.